Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Honored you're here. I hope you're safe, and I hope you're taking this pandemic situation seriously, and I hope you're well lubricated at the moment. Today's guest is a guy by the name of Will Blackman, who just happens to be a good friend of mine on the side, and also one of the biggest shit givers I can possibly name and one of the funniest people I know. He is a Super Bowl champion and a multi, 10 plus seasons in the NFL defensive back, but he's also somebody that really, really got into wine, and it led him up to creating a wine club called the Wine MVP. He launched this venture in the middle of all of this chaos. Him and I are going to give each other a bunch of shit and talk about that process and go through all of it. But before that, I do want to talk to everybody about what's coming on SOM TV. I don't know if you're a SOM TV subscriber, if you were and you're not, or you are thinking about signing up. This next year represents the absolute best of what we have coming. The fourth SOM film is on its way. It is a very deep film about the origins of wine and a lot of other things. Filmed all over the Caucasus Mountains, all over the Middle East, all over South America. I cannot wait to bring this thing to you. I also have a film about the origins of the greatest dishes involving meat that we filmed for many, many years called The Whole Animal. That is coming. We have another film called A Secret Meeting of Chefs, which takes place in Europe, and it is an incredible event involving chefs like David Chang and the head chef at Noma. And it just, the list goes on and on and on about a cooking competition called Gelinots that happens in Europe and is a really prestigious event that brings the greatest of the greats. We also have several competition shows, all sorts of educational content. We're going to talk a lot about what's coming up. And we are also launching our entire podcast network here in the next coming weeks. We have a podcast with Shakira Jones called A Glass for Every Palate. We have Matthew Kaner launching A History of Wine, which is region by region, how each one of these places got formed, who the pivotal characters were informing them. And then Jill Zamorski is going to launch Reading and Drinking, which is a podcast reviewing the very first podcast reviewing wine books. She is just the best. If you listen to last week's podcast, you know what I'm talking about. Also, Blinders, our blind tasting card game, is available. Blindersgame.com. If you want to get that, we have a red deck, a white deck, and also the original deck, which is red and white, but they're all very unique gameplay. I'm really happy to have all of you joining me. Without further ado, Will Blackman. Mr. Will Blackman, how are you, sir?
I'm living, man. I'm actually thriving.
You're thriving. Okay, yes. I like that. Thriving in these conditions. You know, I just read something that California is going to get pretty much reshut down for COVID. So you're starting in a good place to be thriving.
I'm all right, man. We're good. We're actually homebodies. So you, we're doing okay.
You and your family, yeah.
Yeah, we're actually homebodies. We're good.
You have enough wine to make it through this week, month, year.
No, you know what? I'll tell you what has helped my wife, Shauna, and I. So when we first started dating, I was on the Green Bay Packers, okay? And there is not much to do in Green Bay. So it was just she and I for years, okay? In order to survive, you have to really like each other.
In Green Bay? Hey, wait a second. I'm from Cleveland. It's not, that's not fair.
No, I'm saying it was just she and I, no family. No children, just she and I in Green Bay. That's it. That's how you build.
So you build by starting off with the hardest thing, which is just have a perfect relationship, really like each other?
No, you better like each other is what I'm saying. Yeah. So the fact that no one's traveling, everyone's stuck at home, we're great. We're doing awesome. And she's a great cook. So she's been cooking every night, and sometimes I'll share it. She'll do the sides and I'll go on the grill.
This is great. My family and I have, so far I have not been, killed and buried in the backyard, which is something wow. I expect to happen. It's coming up soon. So, all right. So I want to talk, I spoke on the very first episode of this podcast with Baxter Holmes, and we talked about the NBA and wine. And I think the NBA and wine has a little bit of a head start on the NFL, or at least, is more vocal about drinking wine with LeBron and Carmelo Anthony and all of these players. How many seasons did you play in the NFL?
12.
12 seasons in the NFL. That is not an easy thing to do.
It was not at all. I survived 12.
Wow. So you played 12 seasons in the NFL. You won a Super Bowl with the Giants, correct?
That is correct.
All right, so let's talk wine. You come positioned very nicely. What is the wine? What is the wine scene in the NFL? I'm a big football fan. You can imagine where I'm from. There's nothing to do but care about sports in Northeast Ohio. Uh-huh. So it's a lot like Green Bay, except we have worse teams. So what's the wine scene in the NFL? Tell me.
The wine scene is you have more guys into viticulture, winemaking, than you actually have in terms of, I guess, connoisseurs and collectors like you do in the NBA.
So you're saying you have more guys that are actually making wine, or there are guys that are actually into the farming of it? What do you mean?
So guys that are actually – well, both. Guys who are actually making wine, either proprietors or what have you. I think that's what's more noticeable in NFL, because obviously you have LeBron and his guys walking around drinking Petrus and whatnot like it's water, you know. And then in the NFL, you have guys, mostly retired guys, that actually have their own wineries and what have you. So that's where I see the difference. I think right. In terms of players currently in the NFL consuming wine, that's notable. We are way behind in that regards.
Right, right. So, I mean, like when you guys are finally done with training camp, everyone's made the team, are you guys having a glass of wine to celebrate, or what are people drinking?
I'm having a glass right after practice.
Really?
I'm not waiting until the end of training camp. No way. No. It's Wednesday, practice is over. I go back to the room, sit back, watch film with a glass of wine.
No kidding. So, yeah. But you're like a major rarity, though, in the NFL.
I don't know. Guys might consume other things.
Okay. I mean, I just wonder how big of a thing it is, because, you know, it's just all over the place in sports right now. And when I made the first Saw movie, I promise you, this was not the case. There were not NBA players holding glasses of wine and acting like, I mean, it's totally different in 10 years. It's totally changed.
Yeah. I believe there's a good number of guys who are consuming wine in the NFL, but at that level, what LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, CJ McCollum, JJ Redick, like at that level, no, not at all. Right. You might have guys that who are getting Camus and what have, but if guys, there's no one drinking Gervais Chambertin. There's no one drinking, you know, like I said, Petrus, Lafite, Lynch right. Bosch, like no.
Right. Well, you know, I'll just give you my personal editorial and ask your opinion about it. I mean, I think a lot of the wines that these guys are drinking in the NBA is actually pretty harmful to wine culture. I think when people are drinking $1,000 bottles of wine, it's the same as like when, you know, rappers or whatever would come out and drink Cristal, mm-hmm. and everybody just wanted Cristal. Nobody knows anything about what's in it. They don't, you know, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But
but that's what I'm here for.
Right. No, I know. We'll get to that for sure. I think, but you know, I think so. Like if you kick back in your room when you were in the league, what did you drink? What was like, what was in your glass? Something expensive, something cheap, something, what was it?
Well, I started, when I first started drinking wine in the NFL, I was big on red blends. So I used to like the Ménage à Trois.
Okay. So like American Meritage wines. Like so.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I really was big on red blends, because that's from what I learned and what I found out, you know, the general consensus, like either sweet wines or fruity wines, right? For those who just like a glass once in a while. So that's kind of where I was. Like I can do a Gewürztraminer, I can do a Riesling or a red blend. That was kind of my go-to early.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of people. I think that's pretty normal. You know,
right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where'd you grow up, by the way?
I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, Rhode Island. It's one of the finer cities in the world, from what I hear.
You've never been?
Yeah, I know. I've driven through it. Does that count?
So you've never been?
No, I've never been to Providence. No, I've never been. Did you drink any wine as a kid? Your family drink any wine?
You know what? My dad drank wine. I don't know. He drank red wine. I don't know exactly what it was. I believe, if I were to guess, if I can go back and blind taste... If I can go throwback blind taste, that one time I snuck a sip of his wine when I was like 13, I believe it was a Merlot.
You're blind tasting your youth in your head.
I'm going through the grid, bro.
Okay, I like this. Okay, I like this. Good, good. You think your dad drank Merlot?
I think it was Merlot.
Yeah, I didn't have any real. I mean, I had probably White Zin, Franzia, that kind of stuff that's in my house.
That's my grandma. My grandma is all about the White Zin. I mean, refrigerator fulls of White Zin. That's her deal. I have no problems with that. That's what she likes.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely and totally agree with you. I think this whole like certain wines are not okay and certain wines are okay. You know, I mean, there's separate stuff if you, you know, but honestly, I mean, for me, I don't think wine has to be expensive to be good at all. And honestly, if you're the kind of person who can drink White Zin and be happy and it's $7 a bottle or whatever, God, more power to you. That's a great life. Cause you know, the problem with me is I'm sure it's the same with you. The more you drink, the more you want to try new stuff. You know, right. your taste goes in and out and changes, and it's a kind of a bizarre, I don't know, it's just a weird process. I think anybody listening to this understands that, you know, you like big buttery Chardonnays and then all of a sudden you don't want any oak in your wine. And then all of a sudden you want real high acid. And then you go back and then you discover aged wines and, you know, things just totally, you know, they go up and down. They go all over the place.
Right.
I mean, right now I'm on like a huge Madeira kick.
Are you really?
I am. I love it.
Declarations of Independence. Is that how you feeling right now? Is that what's
yeah? I watched Hamilton on HBO Plus and or no on Disney Plus and just no, it's not true. No, I just like Madeira. Madeira is just one of these wines that I think is has amazing history, but it's delicious and it's way underpriced. You know, that's kind of like my criteria right now.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I like sherry, that kind of stuff. But anyways, all right, so let's get back in. So you would kick back after a game in your room. And you would drink what? Practice. Okay. After practice, what would you drink?
Like that. Like red blends.
Just red blends. That's it. And then, how has your taste changed as you went on?
My taste changed because one, I was introduced to higher quality wines, if you will. So living in, you know, Wisconsin, you know, Milwaukee was about a couple hours away from Green Bay. So I would go there. And also check out, you know, some restaurants or some events. I remember I went to one event and this guy, he ordered, I'm speaking as if I was then. He kept saying, I'm going to order this Burgundy. And he was just fired up about Burgundy. And he just drank that thing like it was the last wine available on earth. And just loved it so much. And I tried it and I was like, damn, this is so good. And so all I knew was, okay, I need to find me some Burgundy. And then I looked up Burgundy. And it was maybe 8 gazillion wines that said
right. Yeah, well, Burgundy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, damn, dude. I thought he said he liked Burgundy. There's like so many Burgundies that don't say Burgundy. That's what I didn't know at the time. French labels don't put the variety. I mean, French wines don't put the variety on the label.
Right,
you
right.
Know? So, yeah, that's when I started trying different stuff. And then, you know, a big influence for me was for sure Charles Woodson. I was signed. I was drafted to the Packers the same year he signed as a free agent.
Wow.
And
amazing.
That's a hell of a team too.
Jesus.
Yeah. And that's when I found out, you know, he was full fledged in the wine business. You know,
you were drafted and or signed as a defensive back, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he had the luxury of playing for the Raiders where your training camp is in Napa, you know, so I'm sure, you know,
well, the Raiders, they train in Napa, huh?
Yeah, right at the Marriott is where they stayed.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Oh,
Tell me about it. They're
definitely drinking wine. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm sure he was meeting all the vendors and winemakers and what have you during that whole time. So, yeah, he had his own wine at the time called 24 Wines or Charles Woodson Wines, and now he has Intercept. But every away game, he would take the defensive backs out to dinner. And we were always, you know, usually when guys land in a new
city. Wait, describe to people who Charles Woodson is, who might not understand how big a name this is. You know, okay. what position was he? How should we know who he is?
Yeah, so Charles Woodson is probably one of the most accomplished football players, in my opinion. He was the Heisman Trophy winner out of University of Michigan. Heisman Trophy is the highest award you can receive as a college football player. And then he was drafted first round to the Raiders. And then ended up going to the Green Bay Packers. He's several Pro Bowls. He ended up being the only the third defensive back to win Defensive Player of the Year, win the Super Bowl. I mean, every accolade, he's going to go to Hall of Fame in a couple of years. So every accolade you could think of as a defensive back or a football player. And he has his own winery in Napa.
I mean, that's a hell of a lot of pressure for you as a new defensive back to play in the backfield with a guy like Charles Woodson. I mean, unbelievable. Were you nervous?
I was nervous in terms of, you know, trying not to be starstruck, but pressure to play. But no way. I was so eager, and I couldn't wait to learn from them.
It's amazing. Who else was just quick tangent? Who else was in the backfield with you? So you got Woodson, you.
You had Nick Collins.
Nick Collins. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. He was a Pro Bowler. Al Harris was a Pro Bowler.
It's stacked. That team is stacked.
No, it was pretty cool. And then not to mention too, I walk into the cafeteria and I, you know, bump into Favre and sit down with Charles Woodson. And I'm 21. It's like, okay.
Oh man. Was Brett Favre a wine drinker?
I don't know what Favre drank. No, he was, I think he was a beer guy.
Yeah, it makes sense. He's a Mississippi guy, so I can't picture him as being drinking, you know, some kind of Montrachet or something. I would assume.
Okay.
He's from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So I mean, you know.
So my dad was big on Blackstone wine.
Oh yeah, I sold tons of it. When I bartended, Blackstone Merlot was like,
yes,
that was a mess. I sold it all the time as a bartender for sure.
I just asked him. Oh, you texted him.
Yes. I sold it.
I said Merlot. Yeah.
That's right. You blind tasted your own youth. That's a first.
That.
I love it. That's great. Fantastic. Okay, so Charles Woodson. So now we know who he is. We get a little frame. So Charles Woodson, tell us about how he shaped your kind of wine drinking experience here.
Well, he just kept it classy as a culture, as a lifestyle. So usually when guys land in different cities, we would have to travel wearing a suit and guys would change into their street clothes and go out and about in the city. Well, when we landed, we actually stayed in our suits and we would go to some of the nicest restaurants of whatever city we went to. And he would just end up ordering just really nice wine. And that's the time I didn't even, you know, bother to collect and try to learn. I just knew I liked wine, you know. It was either red or white. I didn't really care. I just enjoyed it. So I kept enjoying it and learning more. Sometimes I would hang out with him solo. We would go to the sushi restaurant in Green Bay and we would hang out. Yes, I said sushi in Green Bay, and this place was bomb. It was called Coco's, by the way.
Wow, sushi. It didn't come from the lake, did it?
No, it probably shipped from the lake. It probably wasn't caught from the lake.
Yeah.
But it was just cool. It was just a good time to hang out, be in our leisure and chill. But the more I kept going to these events and social gatherings and people would try to really school me up and I guess explaining me what to look for in a wine, or, you know, everyone was big on the legs, which determines the quality. And so I wanted to kind of ante up and go home and study and see if I could learn more myself, you know. And as time went on, I would go online and read stuff. I subscribed to like Wine Business. I would get, you know, all these wine magazines. And then fortunately, you know, I came across your beautiful film, which changed everything.
Really? Are you talking about the adult film, my first movie? Are you talking about Sam?
Is that what it was called? It was called Sam.
The first one was an adult movie. It really didn't work out. So I changed and made a different version of Sam about wine.
Yeah.
So
the first one was called Getting Sam. Okay.
Yes. No, that's it. I'm trademarking that.
No, you can't. It's actually one of my friends' Instagram.
Getting some? Damn. Yeah. Because if this whole thing fails, I'm going to have to go into the adult industry anyway.
She's a champagne expert.
Getting some. I like that. Wow. It's nice double entendre there.
It was your film. And because what that did, it just showed me a completely different way of evaluating and understanding wine. It was different. And so immediately I was like, okay, where in the hell can I do something like that? And where I am in California, Peter Neptune, MS Peter Neptune has his own wine school out here.
Yeah, Peter's in the first movie. He's a great guy.
Yeah, and they actually offered WSET. which is one of them. So Wine and Spirits Education Trust. So that I went immediately after the season and went straight home and signed up and ended up passing the level two.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that changed, that just literally changed every single thing. So now
it kind of, it blows my mind to hear these stories about how, like that film, you know, and I, look, I can take some credit. I made the movie, but I also have to give the credit to the people who are in it, you know, Dylan and Brian and Ian, and also
no, just, you take all the damn
was,
credit.
No, no, no. It was right place. I'll take, you know, I'll take the credit I deserve, which is, you know,
because, I mean, but no one really understood, you know, and then you find, you get these, you know, four to five guys that are just like everybody else who happens to be studying and going through it like that.
Right, right, right.
You know, the movie made it tangible.
Yeah, well, the weird part is, and you have to understand, like, that's my education in wine, was making that film. And yeah, obviously it went much further and is still going, but, I mean, I didn't know shit about wine until I made Somm. I mean, honestly, nothing. And I guess, like, with wine, and I know you know this probably from having a wine club and being into the process, and, you know, the more you know, the more you realize, like, you don't know a thing about wine. You know, I think the very top of the top know this the most, is that you just don't. So, I mean, but I had no idea what I didn't know when I made Somm 1. Holy smokes. So what a process.
Yeah, so that's what it did. It totally changed just how I look at wine as a whole. I'm no longer like, I'm not subjective. You know what I'm saying? I really got to understand and appreciate the art and craft of each wine that I consume. Because for football, what made me fall in love with football was the history of the game. Okay. My father had all these VHS tapes, you know, football files, NFL films, Inside the Huddle, Inside the Hidden NFL, like all these.
Yeah, like Jonathan Winters, remember all that stuff? Like,
right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, and then you had Sam Spence with the music and John Facenda's voice, you know, The Autumn Wind, you know, stuff like that.
So, I still think those NFL films, I still think the original NFL films, you talk to Sam Spence, like scoring stuff.
Yeah.
I still think it's some of the greatest filmmaking, especially easily, documentary filmmaking ever. It is.
Yeah, because it was different. It's like, damn, how did they get access to all this stuff, to different people, to all these quotes from people you never even seen or you even knew had a personality until you seen stuff like that.
Well, also, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I think the modern trailer, when you go and watch movie trailers in the theater or you watch them online for a movie and they're real sexy and great music and all action scenes, I think Sam Spence and NFL Films invented that. I really do.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff was like, look at how tough and awesome and great and, you know, the gridiron. And, you know, it had this very like, you got to tune in. You got to watch these guys. You know, I think they invented the modern trailer. That's a total aside, but yeah, I love that stuff.
No, that's fair. So that's when I was like, I was about 4 years old and I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. I don't know how in the hell I'm going to get to the NFL, but that's what I want to do. And that is very similar to seeing all the history and what goes into the winemaking, some of the, you know, all the stories, all the wars and, you know, all the things like that that had to do with wine. I thought that was so damn cool. Because for me, with wine, it was never about trying to be super cool, trying to be in the lifestyle. No, I always enjoyed it as a consumer. But once I saw that, the history, I was like, damn, dude, I want to be part of that. I want to be able to teach and share people and let people know, like, wine, it's a serious art, but it's not that serious in terms of people need to be scared to learn about it, you know? So that's my whole thing, why I started really falling in love and become obsessed with wine.
That's amazing. I mean, that's just the right, I don't mean coming in through, you know, Somm and stuff, but that's like the right way to do this, the right attitude. It's just to have this, like, you know, kind of, I really do, because history is the thing that brought me into wine. It's what definitely what's kept me here, is that wine is about so many other things than just, you know, what you expect.
Right.
And so, you know, I think honestly, you know, the next Somm film is about the origin of wine and the creation of religion around it. I mean, essentially we filmed all over the Middle East and the Caucasus Mountains and, you know, in some of the oldest churches in the world. And it's a wild film, but it's also about how, you know, wine can save countries and, you know, it's called The Cup of Salvation. It's like, if you think about what other subject can you make three movies and they're nothing like each other? And you could probably keep going forever and ever and ever. I want to do one about war. I want to do one about, you know, it's just doesn't end. Yeah. So it's badass, man. It's great. So, okay. So tell me some stories about drinking while you're a player though. I know you have some good stories.
Let me think of some. So, okay, here's the thing. So I had a routine where I would go down and get our snack before we had to go to our rooms for curfew. And I will always get like a big bowl of pasta. I would get some kind of, you know, red wine, usually Italian or something. And I would review film in my notes. So I just had a bowl of wine and pasta the night before games. Okay. And so everyone knew if we were going to the room, Will, what wine are you having? I tell them what I'm having. And they're like, all right, have a good night. So this is where this is where it came from. So 2008, we are traveling to Minnesota and Charles gets reservations at the restaurant 7 in Minneapolis. So we go there, sit down, we have dinner, it's like probably five of us. And end up having dinner. We have a bunch of wine because we had plenty of time to hang out. We got to Minneapolis pretty early. So we had a lot of wine, a lot of food. And then we heard some music coming from above. And the lady's like, yeah, there's like somewhat of a nightclub up there. So like, all right. So we actually finish our dinner, finish our wine, go upstairs. We have more wine. And we're just hanging out, you know, just talking amongst ourselves. We actually saw Troy Aikman and Joe Buck because they were calling the game. And they came by for a little bit to hang out with us. So, yeah, we're just here literally drinking wine as if we don't have a game tomorrow. So then we're done. And I remember going back to the hotel and I was like, damn, I already have a headache. So, yes, I'm pretty drunk. And I remember my eyes were so glossy. And I'm like, damn, dude, like that's what happens when you're hanging out with these older dudes. Like you just don't know like their lifestyle or what they can tolerate, you know? So the next morning I get up and my head is throbbing and my eyes are just absolutely watery. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I need a lot of water and a lot of pre-workout. So I see my other teammates, I think it was Tremont and Nick Collins and Charles. And we get to the game warming up and I'm just like, man, just really fighting it. Just trying to get myself together. And then the game is going. And then all of a sudden, boom, Charles Woodson gets a pick. He gets an interception. And I'm like, okay, that's Charles. Like, Charles was balling that year. He got a pick. Then the next thing you know, later on, Tremont Williams, who was out with us, he gets an interception. And I'm like, okay, Tremont Williams actually has been trending upwards, so I get why he's playing really well. But still, like, them two.
Are they hungover too, or you're the only one that's hungover?
I don't know where they were, but we were all out the night before. And we all were having lots of wine. And then next thing you know, Nick Collins gets an interception for a touchdown. So I'm like, yo, like everybody who's gone out is balling right now. I haven't done anything in this game yet. I actually got yelled at because I caught a punt on the 1 yard line. Maybe because I was drunk. But... Then next thing you know, I remember I got back there to receive a punt and I just was like, okay, I actually felt okay right now. And I catch this punt and then I end up scoring a touchdown. So recap, Charles Woodson, he was out. He gets
So you caught a punt. How many yards did you run it back?
Like, I think 73 or something like that.
Jesus.
So Charles Woodson gets a pick who was out. Tremont Williams gets the interception. Nick Collins gets the interception for a touchdown, a pick six. And then I take a punt back for a touchdown. So we're on the sideline, like losing our damn minds. Like that is just crazy. So ever since that night, I was like, I'm not going to get drunk, but I'm going to have a couple of glasses before, you know?
So like, so Michael Jordan's got the flu game and you've got the hangover game.
I got I was that hungover. Well, I was all right. So that was my football.
Mike McCarthy should have had you guys drinking wine every night if that's how you're going to play a little beat up.
Hey, man, they did, and they ended up winning 2 years later.
Yeah, it's true. They did. That is absolutely true. Amazing. That's great. So, okay, so what? So then
thanks for your response. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's what was it you were drinking? Do you remember? that night?
Nope.
You have no idea?
No.
It's probably nice stuff, right?
Probably.
Huh. Well, you need to remember these things because
people want to. Okay, but I didn't start like really writing stuff down, not for a while.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just curious. I want to know. So this whole process, when did you make it? Because you started a wine club recently.
Okay.
And it's called, let me get this right, the Wine MVP, correct?
Yes.
And I think honestly, you know, there's a lot of wine clubs out here. So I want to talk to you about why you made that decision. But the main thing I want to talk about is what made you do it? Not the why from a business standpoint, but the why did you make a decision to start a wine club in today's climate? What was the reason?
So my original plan was to have my own wine label. And everyone I spoke to in the wine industry, they said, you can have the best grapes. You can have the best winemakers. You can hand harvest. You can do all the great things. But can you sell it? Can you sell the wine? And I thought I was interested. So I ended up looking around for different wine shops to see if I can actually, you know, I guess intern and hang out and study, you know, how wine's being sold. Learn the retail side of the business, if you will. And a buddy of mine named Phil Schwabe, we live nearby, and he's like, hey, man, I have these two friends, Tristan and Kyle. They own the Wine Exchange. It's one of the biggest wine shops here, one of the biggest, most notable in the country. You should check them out.
It's a great store.
Yeah, so I went and checked them out and asked them, like, hey, you mind if I just hang out here? And, you know, I'm trying to start my own wine label. I want to look at some prices and see what's popular or what's, you know, doing well. They're like, yeah, you can hang out for sure. And I probably came here a couple of days. And then I think the third day, Tristan, the owner, calls me in the back office. But he's like, hey, so what exactly you want to do? I said, I want to have my own wine label, I'm pretty sure. So he's like, do you have like friends you help out? I'm like, yeah, like guys hit me up. They have questions. They see me as like their wine friend who knows enough more than they do, if you rather. And that's about it. He goes, man, but you should really try to cater to those. You should try to like, I think you have a pretty good network and a following. I was like, actually, you know, I do. So I remember I started talking about social wine on my Twitter at Will Blackman, and pretty much no one really gave a shit. They was like, shut up and talk football. Right? So I maybe had like two people say something. So that's when I created a new handle called the NFL Wine Guy. I created that. I thought it was super catchy. And then next year, like maybe 2,000 people went over and followed that one the first day. And so that's when I really started thinking about it. And okay, I think I can create some kind of like, maybe be like a personal buyer or some kind of concierge to my NFL friends. And then once again, I had another conversation with Tristan. He's like, yeah, you know, there's a guy, he mentioned Christian Navarro over at Wally's and how he's, I guess, the Psalm to the Stars. You know, he said it'd be something like that.
Psalm to the Stars. If you ever call yourself Psalm to the Stars, Will, I can't talk to you anymore.
Well, then you better delete Dylan's number.
I know. I have to give Dylan shit about this. It's like Psalm to the Stars is it sounds like Dancing with the Stars. So I really don't know.
Hey, man. That's your boy, SD.
I love that guy. But Psalm to the Stars, I don't know. I got to talk to him.
So anyhow, kind of like that for the NFL players, right? And I was like, that's pretty cool. So initially, you know, work something out with them, some kind of like partnership where they're my vendor and we can do some deals or whatever. And I can find ways to get wine into certain people's hands. So this is what really expedited everything. Cause I was really,
it sounds to me like you're feeling it out. You're not like, you know, you're willing to try whatever's working out. Right?
No, I think it's cool. And I'm still in the process of trying to figure this whole thing out. I've been thinking about this for multiple years, you know, and what happened was this guy named Mike Jones, he used to cover the Redskins when I was there, and he called
me. Not the Redskins anymore.
So he called me and he said, hey man, I want to pitch I pitched a story to my boss about an NFL player turning into a song. And he thought it was great. And he's letting me come out there and cover it. And I was like, yeah, come on out. I'll take you through my day and how I, you know, do whatever, make a call, make a sale. And so he came out and I take him through the day. We have a conversation. And then the next week he calls and he's like, hey man, you know, I'm going to send a story out. I just want to go over a few things to make sure the facts are correct. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. So next day I wake up and my phone is going absolutely haywire. Like I have like so many missed calls. Like I thought something happened to somebody. I didn't know what was going on, because from what I knew was he worked for NBC and The Athletic, but come to find out, he ended up posting this on the front page of USA Today Sports, which goes to everybody. So right. Everybody seen it and everybody was calling me. I mean, people were on trains, people were on buses, people were at the airport. Like people I haven't heard from in a long time were calling me. And then, you know, I know like Drew Bledsoe reached out, Rick Meyer reached out. Stan Kroenke had his assistant at a Honada reach out, the owner of the Rams.
Right.
So I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, okay, I need to move and move fast. You know, see, I need to catch this flame while it's lit. And that's where I started, you know, creating the business. And my only issue was I wanted to make sure I could say NFL wine guy. I'm pretty sure that I wasn't. So I did have a conversation with the NFL about the acronym NFL, and they pretty much was like, yeah, you probably have to go through like some licensing application to figure something out. And so that's when I was like, you know, right now I just don't feel like going through anything with that. So
plus I bet it would cost a fortune, honestly. I mean, the NFL is I don't think a lot of people understand. Will, I mean, you could say this more than anybody. I mean, it's a pretty corporate environment, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah. But that's what I mean. That's what I was like, you know what, I'd just rather just go about a different way and figure it out. So that's where me and our creative director, Patrick Meyer, we were just putting our brains together to figure out like, okay, what can be as catchy as NFL Wine Guy? Because I think that's really cool. And then we came up with the Wine MVP, which I think is great because it doesn't just talk about football. It crosses over to every single sport. Because I wanted to have some kind of luxury and some kind of still have that sports feel to it. You know what I'm saying? So you can be the MVP of anything. You can be the most valuable player. You can have the most valuable palette. You can have all that stuff. And that's where I came up with the wine MVP. And so I remember also too, like so many wine companies reached out, like, you know, like wine retailers who were like, hey, what are you doing with the wine MVP? Da, da, da. And I already had this relationship with the wine exchange because I didn't have time. Because I wanted to move now. I didn't have time to try to get a brick and mortar to get my wholesale distributor license. I didn't have time for that. So I just did a partnership deal to get it going. And that's what's been going with that in terms of the wine club. So when the wine club first started, it was me being a personal buyer for just, you know, high-end clients.
Like who? Give me some names.
Dude,
like who
this wasn't your segue to interject and try to set me up. You let me talk. Okay, I know you're trying to do me a favor. Let me talk. Good news.
All right. Listen. I'm trying to make the audience.
It even sounded like it was set up. Like who, Will? give me some big names.
Well, okay. So these names better be fucking huge now. Okay, give it to me.
All right, Christina Wise.
Is my wife? It's my wife buying your wine. This would not surprise me.
No. So Matt Ryan, quarterback MVP for the Falcons. He had a cellar that was pretty much, I think it holds 700 bottles and half of it was Old World. He goes, well, I have no New World wine. So he just let me customize and pick out whatever New Worlds. And then also Reggie Bush.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he built a brand new cellar and it had nothing in it. I think it had like one bottle of Cristal and that was it. And so I did his cellar, Justin Tuck's cellar.
Is he in Los Angeles or New Orleans? Where does he live?
He's in California, yeah.
Okay.
I did Justin Tuck's cellar. Saquon Barkley reached out, so waiting here for him. And also have a conversation with Josh Allen. We're going to talk about wine too. So I started doing stuff for those guys. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing that for them. not everyone's going to buy, you know, a $300 bottle of Opus. So how can I bring that luxury feel, but also make it approachable to everybody else? And that's when I came up with the Wine MVP subscription box, where you get two premium wines. And that's the thing too. I really want it to be like known labels with great reputation, great history that goes inside the subscription box. I didn't, you know, some people, and there's nothing wrong with it. I have no issues. You know, guys want to do the private labels. They want to do the bulk wine and whatever they want to do. It works for them. They have great marketing. But I really want to get wines that had history so that I can truly educate people about the history of wine. You know, like our wines this month was Catena, you know, and also Spotswood.
Right, Spotswood.
Right.
Very, very historic. We have something coming on TV with Spotswood.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Like two wines with just, you know, historic roots over 100 years for each of them, you know, so stuff like that. And I can give you really cool notes about the winery, about the property, about the people, about the, you know, terroir and stuff. And so that's really what I wanted to do. And my whole thing is I'm turning a lot of beer drinkers into wine drinkers just by keeping it simple and not talking over their heads. Cause the whole process, I want everyone to like learn wine together. This isn't like me being superior, me being the guy to talk down to you and you don't know anything. It's like, nah, man, like I'm trying to help, you know, everyone just enjoy this.
Have you found a lot of that in the wine world? Have you found people that sort of act like it's not, you know, for everybody, or you have to learn through them? You're not allowed to do it on your own?
You can see it too, which makes it intimidating for people. Like the biggest thing, you know, the biggest question I'm asked is when I go to a restaurant, I don't know what the hell to get. And I'm like, you're not supposed to. There's somebody there who's supposed to help you, take you through this whole journey. And it's called the sommelier. That's what he's there for. You ask them the questions. Simple as that. And if you don't like it, then you don't like the wine. They're there for it. They have a job to do.
Right. Yeah. It's true.
It takes all inputs. And okay, maybe some want to impress, you know, their date or what have you by knowing the wine list. It's like, listen, learn what the Somm does. Okay. And explain that and let them do their job.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people let others do their job very well.
No, I agree.
But, you know, especially within wine, it's kind of great. And why I wanted to talk to you and why, I mean, you've been on, you know, several things now on Somm TV, and I hope a lot more in the future. But part of the reason I want to work with you and talk to you is this is the attitude you have. You know, it's just basically like, you're not out there saying you know everything, but you're also out there saying like, you know, I want to help you learn. I want to learn with you. You know, it's kind of it's a nice, refreshing attitude.
Yeah. Like come on this journey together. Like that's the whole deal.
Right.
That's the whole thing. And I just remember, like, I had a really cool experience when we were in New York, 2000, I think it was 2016. Yeah. It was my wife's birthday and we were playing the Giants. And she came out.
Who were you playing for? 2016.
So you're
playing
for the Redskins.
Okay.
Yeah. And we stayed in New York after the game. And we ended up going to the Polo Bar down in Manhattan. And I just remember we had this sommelier. And at this time, I knew a good amount about wine where I could have looked at the menu and picked out something for us. But this dude was cool as hell. Okay, his name was Darnell Dotson.
Darnell Dotson. Yeah, I've heard of him actually.
Yeah, but he's a sommelier. He might not be there anymore, but he was at Polo Bar, a black dude, and he was so damn cool. Where I just wanted the experience. I didn't even really want to have a conversation. So he came by with his serviette, you know, perfect. His suit was perfect. He had a cool haircut and he was just very, very cool, very nice and did his thing. And I was like, man, that's what it's supposed to be like. You know what I mean? And yes, he got us Peter Michael Le Carrier Chardonnay 2014. There you go.
Yeah.
No, because I told you I don't remember any of the wines before then, but around that time is when I started remembering stuff.
Right. Well, it's a funny thing. You know, people have been into wine and you'll know this. Like, they always ask, well, what did you drink? So, like, you know, I'm sure you do this now. If somebody mentions, like, you know, I had this great experience, blah, blah, blah. And then you say, what'd you drink? They're going to know, you know, or you're going to be mad they didn't. So you'll understand. You'll come around.
Well, thanks.
You're just a little rookie wine MVP right
now. That's all good. That's fine.
I'm just kidding.
No, I am a humble man. I can take it.
Listen, I'm not even – look, I come at this from like a filmmaking thing. I'm not like a wine expert. I'm bullshitting you. So how does one get this – how does one do the wine MVP? How do you sign up?
So you go to thewinemvp.com and then you go to – there's a part that says wine club. You go to the hamburger menu on the right.
Okay. And then
that's what it's called.
The hamburger menu?
You don't know that?
I don't know that.
Those three lines that are
that's called that's the hamburger menu?
That's the hamburger menu.
You're making this up.
I swear to God. I helped make this website. I know what it's called. It looks like a Big Mac. Anyhow, you go to the hamburger menu on the right.
Okay.
And you click on Wine Club and then you sign up at $79.98 a month. Shipping.
There's probably some web designers listening and they're like, oh man, Jason Scott doesn't know shit.
Yeah, they're probably excited. Hamburger menu. That's why I couldn't wait to say it when you asked.
You're going to drop all your like web design knowledge on me.
Web knowledge, yes, sir.
Wow. Okay, so and then you sign up there. It's all bigger name brands. So you're not searching out wines you can't find in stores. You're not searching out like really obscure type wines at all, right?
Nothing. I mean, it depends because in our first box, I had a wine called Chateau Le Loup Gris, and it was actually from a winemaker here. He actually lives near me. His name is James Pendergrass, and he left a tech company and decided he wanted to make wine. And he's an African-American dude, and he's really, really cool. And he brought his wine into the wine shop, and I was like, dude, this is outstanding. You know, this would be really – it was a Bordeaux blend, but with New World notes in terms of the fruit and, you know, also the notes from the barrel aging too. So I thought that was great. He's not a known producer and he's not making many cases. And then also the other one was from Rui, Mary Jacquesson.
Down in the Côte de Saison in Burgundy?
Exactly. And she doesn't submit for scores or nothing, but she's in, her wine is in all the 3-star Michelin restaurants and it's only $30.
Wow. There's a lot. That's an area I don't think a lot of people think of when they think of Burgundy as far as like how price to quality is outstanding.
Yeah. So that was a good intro for me to, you know, highlight a unknown winemaker that's doing really awesome wine. And also let's take you to a different region and learn about them and what they're doing. And like, okay, yeah, you can get some Burgundy that tastes insanely good for $30.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people think that still exists, but it does. This is great. I love this. All right. So you're kind of going the whole, you know, you're not pouring only like obscure Kerners from Alto Adige, but you're also bringing stuff that people aren't going to be able to find. I mean, that's the hallmark of a good wine club. I love it. People should sign up. I should sign up. How come I don't have a membership to this? Do I get a discount if I hit the hamburger menu? Is there a code?
There are no codes.
No discount codes?
Listen, I made my dad sign up, okay? So everyone's...
I made my mom sign up for SOM TV, so I totally know where you're coming from.
He's like, my dad's like, hey, so this whole wine thing. I was like, yeah, $79.98, dad. I'll call you later.
So great. He just wants you to send Blackstone Merlot. You just custom give him a 3-pack of Blackstone Merlot sometime. Just custom one.
Hey man, that was it. I knew it, man. I'm telling you, man. I just read my mental notes. Merlot.
So good. I love it. I love it, man. This is a pleasure. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, all good. I got enchiladas to eat.
You eating enchiladas tonight?
Yeah.
You got any extra? You're down in you're Orange County. You're pretty close to me. I could get there. I can get there. I like enchiladas. I mean, come on. I figure like this is the part where you invite me down, right?
No.
All right, fine.
Listen, the one thing is I keep it real.
Will you at least tell me what you're drinking with your enchiladas? Can we at least talk about
you
that?
You know, it's probably going to be like juice, dude. I need to chill out for a bit.
Yeah, I'm on a 1 week. I've gone 1 week without a glass of wine. I'm not kidding. It's probably the longest I've gone. I can't remember since when.
Dude, wine. It's been wine, cigars. I'm having a beer right now.
So. You're gonna drink juice. You need to chill out after you finish your beer.
my aperitif, bro.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm having a Sam Adams summer ale.
That's great. Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Well, man, it's a pleasure. If you are a Subsom TV subscriber, which you damn well should be, you can see Will. He blind tastes with Laura Fioravanti, who's an MS. He's really funny in that. He's also
which is nonsense. I need a rematch with Laura because I was not prepared. I have that was like you. I haven't tasted wine in maybe 2 weeks. She just got an awful flight studying her notes, and I was told that I have to bring bottles for her, and that was that. I show up. She has bottles for me too. So yeah, my notes are horrible on that episode.
You were hilarious. Who cares? It's not about being right.
Yes, it is. Can't be a wine professional and be dead wrong. What the hell is this?
It's okay, man. Here's what I would say. I thought that episode was great, but I'll definitely give you a rematch. We need to get we need to get you and another NFL player to do one.
No, I'm saving that for my content, not yours.
Oh, okay. You can save that for your content. You bastard. Okay. So, I'll get Laura in on a plane here in the middle of COVID. We'll get a rematch with you. But we'll also, your upcoming next week is National Wine and Cheese. These whatever these national days are, I don't know who comes up with this.
Yeah, crap. I'm so behind.
I mean, but so we filmed something with you about food or cheese and wine. And I'm telling you, I can't remember the last time I laughed so hard on set. It's you and Matt Kaner, just two country gentlemen just sitting there with some wine and cheese. You guys talking about your cheese pairings is the funniest thing. I can't wait for this to go up next week. It's so good.
I'm nervous because I don't even remember what happened.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it's funny. All right. Okay. You give Matt so much shit. It's absolutely hilarious. All right. Well, it's a pleasure. Everybody needs to sign up for the Wine MVP. Hit that hamburger menu and do it that way. And Will, it's a pleasure, man.
All right, man.
All right, behave yourself. I'll be at your house for enchiladas in a couple minutes.
Well, I'm not just not be at my house, so.
All right, well, I'll just be standing outside waiting.
All right, buddy.
All right, see you, brother. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the SOM TV podcast. Today's episode was produced by Nadine Netman and mixed by John Adams. Don't forget to check out blindersgame.com. Also, our merchandise store is open. If you are looking for shirts, towels, I mean, I think we even have baby bibs and things up, say future SOM. All of that stuff is available. You can see that at SOMTV.com. In the top, you just click on the store. And I hope you guys stay safe, please. Also, if you're going out to restaurants, which are starting to reopen, please do me a favor. Be nice. These people are really stressed. I'm sure you are too, but get in, eat your food, tip them well, have a drink, and get out and be very nice. Don't leave bad Yelp reviews. Until next time, we have another podcast coming up really soon. I can't wait to talk to you again. Bye-bye.